Good afternoon, welcome. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Today is the day we push our ship off the dock. Senate Bill 270, I feel like we should have had a cake or something, but I didn't plan ahead, so.
We have one piece of cake left in our caucus room.
Yes, okay. Let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 270. And this is the bill, of course, that was unanimously recommended to the legislature from the task force that met last year on giving institutional boards to two and now three universities, U of O, OSU, and Portland State. In the meantime, we have been filling in those recommendations with some very, very technical language, and I'm very grateful to all of the universities and to the university system for collaborating and working together with all of their legal counsels and legal staff to not only make those recommendations solid, but clean up some of the old existing higher education language having to do with records and bonding, some of those record-keeping requirements were written before the internet. So they needed that. So we have adopted the most recent major amendment last week, and as we predicted, there was a few Scribner's errors and some minor changes even to that, and we have a new amendment that I'd like to adopt just to make those technical changes on top of what we did, and then push it off to the next port, which is the Ways and Means Committee. So we got a little process here, Senator Cadope. You have to go through to get us to where we need to be.
Chair House, I move we recede from the dash four amendments, Senate Bill 270, dated March 11, 2013.
Senator Cadope moves the committee recede from the dash four amendments dated March 11, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none.
That's a word I hadn't heard before, recede.
Mr. Chairman, as the committee secretary, Taylor recommended that particular motion.
I know what I mean. I just haven't heard it in this context.
It's elegant, sir.
Yeah.
Chair Hass, I move to adopt the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 270, dated April 17th, 2013.
Senator Cadope moves to adopt the dash five amendments to Senate Bill 270. Is there any discussion? Senator Byer.
We're doing the amendments?
Yep. Just a minute, yeah.
Pause here. Just waiting for the bill.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, the dash fives are adopted.
Chair Hass, I move Senate Bill 270 as amended with a be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cadope moves that Senate Bill 270 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, Senator Byer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a long cake baking process. I think we're sort of 4 years into this now, including a lot of involvement over the interim. And I think we've got a good product. And I want to compliment the chair and his counterpart, Representative Dembro. I think they've done a great job leading us both through the interim and through this work group. And we've got a good product that I think will help higher ed in Oregon. While most of the focus has been on the big three, if you will, I think the task force on the regionals is a very significant piece of this legislation, and what I heard all through the process is a real commitment by everyone that those were very valuable institutions that we needed to take care of, and I'm assured that we will do that as we go ahead. We've got eight stellar universities in Oregon, and we should be proud of all of them.
Senator Rubin.
Yeah, I just want to make a couple comments. One, this has been a really personally important bill to me in a number of ways. I was fortunate enough to be a high school principal in a high school district that had a school board that was very supportive of looking at innovative ways to make sure that kids got the best experience they could possibly have. And because of that, we had experiences with the Cook Islands and experiences with Germany with our kids. We had our own radio station, our own TV station. We have a lot of things. Even when we didn't have a lot of money, because we were a declining enrollment school and a lot of other things were not happening, but because people in the community came together and did things and helped us, we were able to do some things for our kids that even they would said as they went to other places, weren't offered in a lot of other places in an environment that didn't have all those things. And I would tell you that from my perspective, and I guess I say this just to the boards that are going to be there, boards that listen to all the different constituencies that they have and to take that into their thinking about how they move forward and what they do things, have the greatest experience to be able to get the most out of what they're doing. And, you know, from my perspective at the high school, some of the things that we did best and we saved the most money on had to do because my custodial staff would come and say, think about this, and we go to the board and they'd say, oh, wow, that's a great idea. That could save us money. We'll do some things. We had teachers who came with really exceptional ideas about new classes and other kinds of things. And I hope that as these new boards progress and get to figure out who they are, they remember to listen to the people in and outside so that they can make the best institution possible. And I think when you look at what's happened at OHSU and you look at some of these other places where there have been boards, you really recognize they do listen to all those people. I mean, it has been the staff at OHSU, it's been the other people that are working there that have helped make that an institution that it is, and it's the boards that are open to listening and learning. And as it goes to this next step in Ways and Means, you know, keep in mind the things that we've talked about over and over again about we don't want the tuitions to go up, we want to make it available to all Oregonians and figure out how you do that and how you make sure that those things happen. And I think that's really important. And keep connected to the system. And I think we've done all those things in this bill that are really important to me so that we have the kind of organization that can actually move these institutions in a really positive way as part of the Oregon higher education system. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I support the concept and direction. I'm concerned a little bit that we're moving awfully fast with all this stuff. I have some concerns over the dollars that are currently attached, and I know Ways and Means will deal with that, that it might be duplicative of dollars that exist other places, and that in essence we could be taking dollars out of the classroom. I do object slightly to comparing these boards to OHSU as comparing apples and oranges. OHSU is an incredibly unique institution and needs to be recognized as that. And other than that, an issue I've had from day one with this is enrolling OEIB into legislation when indeed that structure may not exist 2 years from now. Other than that, everything's fine.
Consistent. Further discussion?
I am consistent.
I just wanted to say that I'm grateful for those comments, Senator Roblon, and I think this is really a great opportunity for philanthropy that would not exist were it not for these boards, and that we have tried really hard to hit that sweet spot of letting these universities reach their highest and best potential while still maintaining the integrity of a state system accessible to every single Oregonian, and that even with the passage of this bill, we are not done this multi-year restructuring of our university system and our higher education system. And as this bill addresses, next up are the technical and regional universities to see if we can align them and make them more competitive, more accessible, and better. And I say this at a time when I think our higher education system, community colleges included, are working at about the best they have ever worked in Oregon history. They've got more students, and they're doing it with less state money, and the graduation rates are getting better, and the decline in enrollment versus completion is getting better. And so my hat's off to everybody in our higher system now, and I think with these changes and with more money, we'll be able to improve on that. So if there is no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byers.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Vice Chair Coe?
Aye.
Chair Hess?
Chair Hess votes aye. The measure goes to the Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Okay. Now we have four or five just pass-offs here to other committees in work sessions 277, 262, 211, and SJR 4. And before I go much further, where's the announcement on that one? Right there. We will not be doing a work session on Senate Bill 828, 218, or 226. So, 277, Senator Canope, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 277.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 277 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 277 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 262.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 262 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 262 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we've got two Cruz bills here. Senator Cruz bill. Let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 211.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 211 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 211 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I'd like to open up a work session on SJR 4.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Joint Resolution 4 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules by prior reference.
Senator Canope moves Senate Joint Resolution 4 without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules by prior reference. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
We have public hearings on a couple of small bills that we have heard from before, so I will start with a work session on 2187 and, I'm sorry, public hearing on, I'd like to open up a public hearing on 2187, and I think the department is on standby here if we need him. Mr. Barber, did you want to come up? Say a summary or update us. I don't think there's been any changes since you were here.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, Matthew Barber, compliance specialist with and team lead of the private career schools licensing unit at the Oregon Department of Education. Senator Hess, yes, there have been no changes to House Bill 2187-A since we last presented it.
And okay, questions? I close the public hearing and open up a work session on House Bill 2187-A.
Chair Hess, I move House Bill 2187-A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves 2187-A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none. Senator Roblin. Up to you.
I will be glad to.
Okay, thank you. And I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2189. Councillor, can you give us a brief summary?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2189, we heard previously, we heard it on March the 21st. It allows the State Board of Education and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to adopt rules relating to the general governance and operation of career schools. It allows the rules adopted to be specific to individual professions provided by those career schools, and it modifies some statutory language. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, and it passed out the House floor by 57-0 to 3 vote.
Any questions on this bill to our staff or to Mr. Barber? Okay, close the public hearing and open up a work session on House Bill 2189.
Chair Haas, I move House Bill 2189 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 2189 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. House Bill 2189 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Cruz, would you be so kind to carry this bill?
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. I would like to now open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 272. Could you give us a summary, Richard?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 272 relates to talented and gifted programs. The committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments to the bill as the actual substantive measure. The Dash 1 amendments mandate that the Oregon Department of Education shall develop a statewide plan for talented and gifted gifted education. It details the requirements for that education and the structure of it. It does have some monetary requirements with it. It allows up to $1.3 million expenditure from the state school fund per biennium to support these programs. It reflects the work of the Talented and Gifted Education Task Force, which was created by Senate Bill 330 in the 2011 legislative session. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. And I have Ms. Rebecca Blocker and Ms. Ricky Schubert-Myers. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Haas, my name is Rebecca Blocker. I'm the Specialist in Talented and Gifted Education at the Oregon Department of Education. It was my pleasure to provide administrative support to the Talented and Gifted Education Task Force. And members of the Talented and Gifted Education Task Force are here with me today. The Chair, Ricky Schubert-Myers, the farthest to my left, to your farthest to your right, has some statements to make, as well as Dr. Kathy Robinson, who is also a member of the TAG Task Force. And I would like to step back and also let our colleague Paul Weil from Springfield School District also sit in this chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And you are speaking to the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes, we are. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Ricky Schubert-Myers. I live in Salem, Oregon, and I'm here today as the chairperson of the TAG Task Force, which spent a year examining gifted education in Oregon as charged in Senate Bill 330. Today, I'm here to offer support of Senate Bill 272-1, which is the amended placeholder for the bill established by the task force. Through the work of the task force and my own experience as an educator in Oregon for over 30 years, I see a great need for state funding dedicated to the identification and education of the gifted children of this state. So I would like to share with you some of the task force findings. And the findings we found under three charges. The first charge was, what do we need for instruction and services? And we went about this by taking a look at what do we already have in place. And what we found were that districts are struggling to comply with the state talented and gifted mandate. Services are inconsistently delivered through statewide. And there is no TAG certification through Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. We also found that federal legislation through No Child Left Behind skewed priorities to focus on benchmark for all rather than high achievers and their needs. We took a look at funding for talented and gifted education, and districts in the state of Oregon received no direct funding for talented and gifted education. TAG is a state program and has no federal funds. So only Oregon can provide this funding for talented and gifted education. Funding at the local level and state level is inadequate to support the 42,375 Oregon students who are identified as gifted. Major inequities exist among Oregon districts in the local funds available for student education. And the last charge was to take a look at who are our talented and gifted learners. Identification for TAG is systematically inconsistent through Oregon. Current identification at 42,375, or 7% of Oregon's total public school population, and it is disproportionate in the populations that are identified, through the, which the students are identified. Most districts use OAKS, that's the state testing, to score for identification, and begin at grade 3 to identify, when we know that best practice is to identify as early as possible. We are charged to identify kindergarten through 12th grade. 31 districts have identified no talented and gifted students. 36 districts have identified under 2% of their student population, and the national norm is 3 to 8% of any student population to be gifted. The task force found that for our recommendations is that we write and develop an Oregon statewide plan for talented and gifted education. We discovered and decided that to build infrastructure first in order to bring districts on board and be able to support them as they implement talented and gifted education in their districts is the most important thing, and that the changes need to be system-wide and comprehensive. So I respectfully request your favorable consideration of this bill to fund talented and gifted education in the state of Oregon, and I thank you for your time and allowing me to testify today.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead, sir, and do questions. Okay.
Do you want to go next?
Okay. My name is Paul Weil. I'm currently in the Springfield School District. I am the curriculum coordinator for the district, and I also serve as co-principal of Gateways High School, which is an alternative high school. I've been in education for 26 years. I wouldn't trade those 26 years for anything. And most of those years have been serving special populations. So I've worked with migrant education programs and those students who are recent immigrants to our country. I've worked with English as a second language students, coordinating that program. I currently do that still for Springfield Schools. I work in Indian education, providing support for our Native American students. And I've been very involved in Title I, which works with students in poverty. So basically, I have a passion for students in need. 4 years ago, I was at the Springfield School District at that time as well. I was asked to also add talented and gifted education coordination for the district to that list. I was a bit overwhelmed, but I was also concerned that that group of students didn't fit the other kinds of students I was passionate about serving, because I believed at that time in this myth that highly capable learners are going to do it on their own anyway, and let's focus on the other kids. And I've learned in 4 short years doing this program that that's not true. These kids have incredible challenges and needs that also require additional services and programs. So I'm basically here to say that, in my opinion, this is an issue of equity just as much for these students as it is for the other students I just mentioned. And I know our current funding model for education recognizes different populations of students and sets aside funds for those populations. So it just makes sense to me that we would also consider doing that here for these students who, as were identified earlier, have great needs. So thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Kathy Robinson, and I've been in the field of gifted for over 30 years. I did my dissertation on the promise of gifted and what happens in the state of Oregon that that proves inconsistent for kids that have been identified. So we have several schools, as she mentioned, or districts that do nothing. They don't identify and they don't know what to do with the kids. We have others that do have some programs, but part of it is because there's really no funding. There's a mandate that we find these kids and identify them and tell teachers that they have these kids in their classes, but there's nothing really supporting them once that's happened.
Thank you all. I think we do have some questions here, and I'd be very curious to hear Senator Robin's take on TAG, since I think he was principal back in the day when we still effectively had TAG. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem, of course, has been the financial one over the last 4 years or more, and it feels like you know, you get into this kind of triage situation, and we still may be in that, and if you take TAG is an example of underfunded and inadequate. I would defy you to find any other segment of our educational system that could make the same case. One of the things that this amendment does is take $5.8 million out of the school formula and fund TAG, which means it will come at the expense of something else when you get inside the formula, which is a zero-sum game. So, While I'm on your side that we need to do TAG, I think it's one of the tools we can have to keep families from exiting the public school system to go on the private side. Can you give us your strongest case why this should maybe leap in front of some other priorities in our K through 12 system now?
Well, in my opinion, it's a very difficult decision. It's the so-called Sophie's choice, and we've been in that situation for a long time. The last year and a half, I've also become, because of budget cuts, the co-principal of Gateway's alternative high school. We have about 120 kids in that high school, and they didn't make it in the regular system. And one of the things I found out about these kids is many of them are highly capable learners, but the system didn't work. And I just wonder how many of those kids would have had more success had we earlier on had an adequate TAG program that would have provided the challenge and the rigor that those kids so deserve and need. The other thing I would consider and mention now is there is this notion that TAG is for that group of kids who would make it anyway, and I mentioned that before. And so those special populations that I mentioned, the migrant students, the English as a second language students, the kids in poverty, TAG students exist in those populations as well. So by supporting the TAG program, you're also supporting the other programs that we currently have set-asides for, either through our state funding formula or through federal programs like Title I, which serves the kids in poverty.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very difficult choice. Ms. Robinson, I'd be curious to get your take. You've actually written on this. On this, the students that actually do worse, these sort of, I don't know what you would call them, advanced learners, but for whatever reason, they actually fall behind because they don't have a program like that. Did you come across that?
Yeah, I did come across that. I think that there's this belief that because they're capable, they're going to perform. And often that doesn't happen. Often they're put in a classroom, they're set aside, you know, go ahead and read. What we don't do, though, is do a very good job of moving them forward and as quickly as they can get there. And so what we have to do is make sure that two things. Sorry for going around. But we need to have them go deeper into the content. I think a lot of times they say, well, let's just accelerate these kids. You know, they're in third grade. They can do fourth grade work. I know, let's put them in fourth grade. That won't be a cost to anybody, and maybe that's the way to go. And sometimes, and for some kids, that's a good thing to do. But part of it is they're really not stretching themselves enough to really reach their potential unless they're going deeper into things, unless they're spending more time studying and researching and really grasping what's going on. What happens is those kids sometimes, you know, they've been skipped or they've, you know, straight A's all the way through, and then they get to something really difficult and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to fail. They don't know how to not look good. They don't know how to not be the top in the class, and then that ruins their ability to really go forward and, you know, to make a difference for themselves and to get better. I mean, it's just too easy for them, and they're not used to being challenged. They're used to being given something to do. They do it. But pushing harder for what we need, I look at the Common Core, and that really, I get excited about what's going on in Common Core, because those third grade tag kids are going to be equally challenged as the other third graders, because it goes deeper into things. It requires them to do a lot more thinking. So I think, you know, this is a good convergence time where, you know, we've got Common Core state standards coming. The kids are going to have to, if they want to be college ready, they have to know things more than just the superficial answer that they've been allowed to give prior.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, I mean, I like the study part, even though I get tired of studies. I will say, you know, in my personal experience, my three children, one was a TAG student. The other two were very good students. And we need to look at making sure that we have appropriate identification techniques, and that's in here, because so often in schools, we identify really great kids who really please teachers well, and they get listed as tag kids when in fact they are not. And then if you actually do put them in the real kind of tag curriculum, they feel very unsure of themselves, and it hurts them in the long run, because all of a sudden they recognize they are not the same. And I will tell you that the difference between a special needs child and the regular population is not much different from the regular population and true TAG kids. They see the world in a different way, and a number of the dropouts that we would have in schools dropped out because they did not find a place, and teachers would have identified them as troublemakers and other things, not necessarily as gifted students, but when you actually get some real testing and have people who care and understand, they can identify those kids and find avenues for them. I don't think it costs a lot more money. It takes a mindset. Currently, we have teachers who have a difficult time understanding the differences, because if you are not TAG, I am not, but if you are not TAG, it's difficult for you to understand the mind of those other people, and there are people who are threatened at times by that, whether they're adults or children. And so it is a very complex issue, and yet we are losing amazing potential in our school system because we are not meeting the needs of these kids. And it can be as simple as moving them ahead. That works for a few. But more, it's the old TAG program, and what we tried to do at our high school was make sure that they had time together. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean age together. It means talents together. So if you have kids who are truly talented in language, and they never have a time to be in a classroom with other kids that are the same, where they can really get going, it really deprives them of experiences. And I will tell you that my daughter, when she was a freshman and got into this freshman through 12th grade TAG class, it was the most fulfilling experience she had. And she's a playwright now, and we talk about the kinds of stuff, because for the first time, she didn't have to look around the classroom and figure out what should I say and not say, because I want to still be liked by the rest of the kids in the class. And I can't put my hand up every time, because if I do that, they will be a little uptight with that. And so wouldn't it be nice if I could just say, I'm going for this one, and this other senior is going to have to kind of compete with me, because I know it better than that senior did. I don't care, because in this class, it's okay to just be smart and to just understand it at a different level and bring up subjects and bring up things that I read 10 years ago that I still remember that relate to this particular thing, and bring these authors together. And when you finally see that happen and you have teachers that can do it, it is an amazing thing to watch. And whether that's mathematics or whether that's English or whether it's any other subject, when kids have an opportunity to spend time with other kids that are like them, exploring things that they've never talked about before with teachers that know how to get out of the way and let them do it, I will tell you that in most schools, if you don't have a forensics program, you are missing a big chance for TAG kids, because in a forensics program, it is their learning. And they realize real quickly the teacher isn't going to know as much as them, no one else is, and it's them against the world, and I can go as deep and as much as I want about this stuff. And it is just It's about how you organize the school, not as much about how you have to, what you have to provide for them, though there are places you need to have. And you need to have someone. I was fortunate. We had a librarian who was TAG herself, brilliant woman, who really loved working with these kids and made the library a haven for them and an opportunity. And so I guess as a parent and as a person who understands, I think, more clearly than a lot, because I had learning disabilities, so I had a different expectation about learning how things worked and having understanding by other people. If this can get us to a point where we really, truly understand simple little things you can do to make those kids feel comfortable each day about how they go about doing the work they do and how they can have that moment once a day where they really feel that they are valued for what they can offer to the thing, and then they don't have to check themselves with respect to everybody else in the school and classroom, it would be a really great thing. And I think schools would find that all of a sudden some of these people who are the exceptional troublemakers would stop being the exceptional troublemakers. Because if you're smart enough and there's nothing else to do, there's lots of things I can do with that intelligence. And I would like that intelligence to be focused towards themselves growing and figuring out what they want to do and then offering a whole lot to our society later on. So I think the program's good. I just hope we can get down to hands-on little things you can give to schools so that the school that's in Powers or Coos Bay or Portland understand there are some things they can do which are not going to be expensive but can be life-changing for these kids from elementary on. And until you've really sat with kids that are really doing that, it's hard to explain it, and I'll never get to know how their brain works. I get a chance to glimpse it every once in a while. It's pretty exciting, but it's different from other people in significant ways. And most of the kids that get into those classes inappropriately request to get out of it fairly quickly because they don't feel comfortable. And it's no... labeling people is never, in my opinion, really good. If we could have a system that just took kids where they were and gave them what they needed, it would be really wonderful to me. Because most of the TAG kids that I knew didn't want to be, well, there's a group. You know, that we always think that they, you know, they're nerdly. There are some that are. And there are others that are totally the most, they are the politicians of the school. They know how to get everybody to do what they need to do, and they do amazing things. But so they have this big range as well. But a lot of the kids that I knew didn't really want to be. The TAG kids didn't want to be in the TAG class. And some of these other kids wanted to be in the TAG class. And it's just because they didn't know what it could be for them. And I hope that this gets something happening. And if we spend extra money for kids with special needs at the one end, these kids are just as significantly different at the other end, if identified correctly. And it's not anybody... it's not on anybody, parent or otherwise, that your kid isn't, that there's something wrong. It's just they are. And I think that's what happens in our schools. We get worried about hurting people's feelings and doing other kinds of things. But anyway, that's all I have to say. And I hope that we get kind of some answers for little schools so they know that there are things that aren't going to break the bank that can make a difference in these kids' lives.
And I think that's where the teacher training comes in. I think the money spent on professional development so that they aren't afraid of working with these kids. So they're embracing the fact that they may be different. And for the kid, it makes the biggest difference to have a teacher who understands, who can say, oh, yeah, well, that's fine. You can do this or you can do that. And we don't have right now, we have an endorsement for ELL. You know, they go through several different classes. Pacific University has some coursework that I just worked with a gal yesterday. She's had 11 credits now. She's working with ELL kids, and she's getting a TAG endorsement. And she's already identified 6 of her ELL kids who barely speak English, but who are right there. She said, I knew right away by how fast they were learning that, you know, they may not speak English, but they're definitely TAG. So just more teachers who can look at a class full of kids and say, oh, look at this. I just can't believe what I just heard. And know that that's great. You know, the more... we can identify all of those kids, the better. But it takes a teacher who knows what to look for, who's not afraid that there's a 7-year-old who knows more than they do, instead of saying, well, you know, I'm bigger and older. You go, wow, tell me more. And so any kid, any particular TAG kid who has a teacher who says, tell me more, instead of you're not so smart, exactly. It just makes a huge difference. And they're afraid. Yeah. But, you know, yeah. We can...
my field, the thing I did best in was mathematics, and it was my savior with my other learning disabilities. And I will tell you that watching really amazing mathematical kids come in conflict with a teacher who knows their subject, but just kind of knows their subject, and they ask these questions that are probing to the teacher, and the teacher doesn't feel comfortable because they don't know, is just hurts me inside, because you can get these kids that will say, well, that's not the only way you can do that, right? And I say, oh, no, there's lots of ways in mathematics to do it. And then they'll show you lots of ways, all of which are right, all of which have amazing thought behind them. When other kids are struggling to get one, they're past that concept and have already got started thinking about two and three ways. And if you don't give them a little encouragement that, yeah, that's good, or, that one does that one work in this particular case? And then they'll say, oh, I guess it doesn't. I said, well, then it probably isn't a true case of one you'd better use from now on, because if it doesn't work always, you've got to look for the ones that do. And so it's that kind of thing, you know, whether it's in English and they bring in all this reading that they've done before and the teacher hasn't read the books they've read, and it is a threatening kind of feeling. And some of them are really cute and they can wrap you around and they're really making stuff up. So you have to be...
there's that.
You have to know that there are limits for them as well. But if we don't do it, we are missing an amazing potential for our country and our communities.
Senator Cruz.
Having said that, I would suggest that we have created a systemic situation where teachers can't be innovative. They have to teach to the test. They have to check these boxes off. We now have Common Core standards coming, which is going to create more boxes to check off. And so I would suggest for this sort of approach to work well, we first off have to free up teachers to be teachers again. And we have wandered so far away from that that even a teacher who may understand it may not have the time or the ability to do what they would like to do simply because they have to fill in all these boxes. And so there's a systemic issue here that needs to be addressed, I mean, to truly be able to implement something like this.
We need to get more money and more teachers. I agree with you.
We can eliminate No Child and a few of the other things.
We have pretty much eliminated
that are, yeah, we haven't. We've just changed it.
Since we have you experts here,
I didn't do that.
Since we have you here, I'm wondering about, you know, as a parent, I can attest to the fact that we all think our kids are brilliant. And
my war.
So, you know, we encourage Johnny to, you know, go into the TAG program. And when Johnny is not picked for TAG, and what effect does that have on these kids, or if they don't, they don't make the team? What kind of effect is that? Making something up isn't there.
I think it depends on how the student has been approached with the whole process. You know, how has this been explained to them? If this has been explained as this is information that will help your teacher know you better as a learner, it doesn't necessarily have to say either you're this or you're this. It's here's a better way of knowing you as a learner. And I think some of it's parent expectations too. If we could help parents understand this is a way to help you know your child better as a learner. And maybe if we had a little better, more complete way of identifying TAG kids. I mean, I think there are still some districts who take a singular test score, even though that is not what we are to do. We're to take a body of evidence and look at it. Some districts, because of financial constraints, maybe knowledge base, will take a singular test score and yes or no with that. So if we, as we have suggested, establish a way for the state to help give a little more guidance, to give a little more support in the identification process, I think we could make it a better system all the way around, in that we could also provide support to teachers and administrators about who this TAG kid is as we're identifying them too, to assist them as they formulate instructional plans for them.
Other questions? Well, we really thank you for bringing your depth of knowledge here on this issue. Have some other people signed up here to testify. Sue Love, Celia Backley, Stephen Price.
Sorry for butchering those names.
Small group.
Yeah, yeah.
Chair Haas and Vice Chair Knope and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Susan Love, and I reside in Salem, Oregon. I am the parent of a TAG student who is now currently a junior at college. I am the Executive Secretary for the Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted, and I am here today on behalf of OTAG's members. OTAG is a statewide nonprofit membership association founded in 1978. OTAG provides support and information to families, teachers, and community members of the talented and gifted students in Oregon. At OTAG's 2012 conference, our members voted to support the report, The Quiet Crisis, that was submitted by the Task Force on the Instruction of Talented and Gifted Children, as required by Senate Bill 330 from 2011. Mm-hmm. OTAG is very grateful to the members of the TAG Task Force for the time and effort they have given towards improving the education of gifted students in Oregon. I'm here today to inform you that OTAG's members are in support of the amended version of Senate Bill 272, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Stephen Price. I am the president of the Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted, and in my school district, I am a program coordinator for a variety of programs. If I might just take a moment to address the question of equity of funding that I heard a few moments ago, I'd like to point out that there are special funds for migrant students, Title I-C funds that are federally provided for English language learners through Title III. There are school districts receive a double dose of ADM for their special education students, and they receive 50% more for their English language learners. TAG students don't have any special funding. One thing that is frequently overlooked when we look at funding, though, is curriculum. And curriculums are designed for mainstream students. They're designed for the students who are in the mainstream. And so we provide a curriculum that addresses the needs of the mainstream students. And so we're hitting them just because the curriculum is for them. We're providing extra funding for the special education students, the English language learners, the migrant students. Most districts have funding for Title X through for homeless students. All of these other areas. But for the TAG students, we don't have any curriculum. We don't have any training. We don't have any funding. We're really kind of just hanging out there without anything. And so that is why, as I support this bill.
Thank you.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Celia Bakuli, and I reside in Salem, Oregon. I am the proud parent of an exceptional troublemaker. And so you had the question of what would this save? Well, I can tell you it would save a lot of our poor elementary principal's time. Hello, Mrs. Bakuli, your son is in the office. He's 12. He's in honors algebra 2 at South High School. He's annoyed because he's only number 2 in his class with a 98.7% average, and if he were here, he would make sure I did not forget the 0.7. That is wonderful. He has a very persistent mother. The tragic thing and the thing that we need you to fix is there are children that we left behind that were more talented than he. Sorry. I hope he never reads this, right? That's what's really sad. So as a bilingual parent in bilingual programs and Title I programs for the last 6 years, we have brilliant kids, and they are sitting there, and they're just waiting. And I'm not really here so much for my son, although I adore him, but I don't have to work. I'm fine. We're fine. Okay? I'm not here for him. I'm here for them. Thank you.
Thank you. 90.7. we have that noted. Questions for this panel? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I have Chuck Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. This has been a really interesting testimony, and certainly we're, as you might guess, rapidly trying to assimilate what's being said and how this would all fit together with a the state school fund and other aspects of the education enterprise in Oregon. One of the difficulties we have is that although these were drafted February 27th, we're all just getting a look at them, so it's kind of difficult to work our way through them quickly. But I thought I'd give you just some short thoughts. Number one, no argument with the folks you're hearing from today in terms of the needs of these students, the importance of them having hopefully appropriate opportunities in school to meet the challenges of being just too smart. I wish we all had that problem. But one of the difficulties right now is we're looking at a bill developed outside of the OEIB, the state department, state board, and local, as we see it, the local board activities around this issue. The funding proposal, I was thinking of the comments made by Senator Roblin on how you have students at extremes and we deal with them in different ways. This deals outside of that kind of program. Generally, as we define various categories of students, we pay for them through the formula. We determine how to weight those unique situation or groups, determine if this is a group where districts need to have additional weighting in order to meet their needs, and pay for it through the state school fund this way. This is a grant program. This is just straight up. For some reason, it looked like, if I added it up correctly, about $9 million associated with this over 3 years is not devised based on any kind of formula, based on any kind of clearly defined need. We would suggest that this bill, along with its referral, we hope, to Ways and Means, also go through revenue to see if one of the issues we're overlooking is that talent and gifted students, defined appropriately, represent a category of student that deserves special weighting in order to provide districts with the kind of funding they need to provide the more enriched programs they're asking for. Those are just some quick thoughts. And certainly we'll look forward, if this bill progresses, to working on it further.
Thank you. We do now have a referral to the Revenue Committee because of the...
Okay, I wasn't sure if you did. Yeah. I hadn't. Part of it's been kind of tracking this one down, yeah, and where it's headed, so apologize if
you... for those of you who don't know, the Revenue Committees deal with any changes in the school formula, and... maybe it does deserve some kind of special weighting.
Yeah.
What would that involve, though, and how would you...
That would be difficult, wouldn't it?
You know, would you end up with administrators inclined to designate every student possible a tag student, or how would you guard against that?
Apparently, that's a problem now. judging from what I've heard about parents' determination to make sure their kid I've got a 44-year-old daughter who's very special, but her children are the tag folks in it now, my grandchildren, I assume. I don't know. That would be the kind of detail I think needs to be worked out, is how would you arrive at some sort of objective determination of a student's capacity to participate in a program like that. Then you have some census of them that is submitted to the department to determine that level of weighting. But I assume it would have to be some sort of objective criteria. I think your question's a very good one, though, given our experience with special education and how definition has been at times difficult to
really pin down, are we hitting it right? And whether or not having single, you know, we can go into, you've been through it more than I have, but whether or not we weight even appropriately for mild or more difficult situations in special ed. So if you're smart and then way smarter, should we weight them differently?
And you certainly don't want to create incentives or disincentives in the formula. I personally would like to see this money outside, so it isn't a Sophie's choice. It's a choice to do both. And we're making it a priority in this legislature. Okay, we're going to attack DAG here. And but right now, there's neither incentive or disincentive because for all intents and purposes, it's moot. Senator Robo.
Thank you. You know, I would agree that it, you know, you can do that with the weighting system. It is it adds credibility kind of to the difference. But it, really, what the distribution system is a distribution system.
Right.
It's not about weight. I mean, the truth is, some special needs students cost four times what you get, and others cost one. And it's the political way we agreed to divide the money amongst each other. So, I mean, I don't see it as the end all. And I think that if we're really going to try to make any particular deal, starting out with a pilot project that does this, but I think revenue is a good place to talk, to have that conversation. I just say, you know, I think the idea that let's see if we can identify and get the right things in place to identify in right ways. You know, we have the problem in special needs where there are parents who try to get their kids there.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of just because it has other opportunities for them. And so, you know, we as an institution have to get better at being able to identify and understand the real differences. And I think there's ways to get there. I mean, I think it's just, I don't know if the system, as you know, if we ever open up the distribution system, it would not be fun for anybody in this building.
Yeah.
It took a lot of people's lives earlier. I know.
Yeah, you saw right through my plan here.
Yeah.
But it does suggest, and I'm just following up on your suggestion that we're looking, and if we are looking at a class of sort of a broad class of student, that it does represent a kind of a need to relook at how we distribute money, you know, and we'll take a look.
Is that a rule?
And clearly, if you look at the national studies and other studies around the world about this subset of students, they have come together around some fairly small numbers of kids. I mean, we're talking 3-4% that are really in that whatever. And then if you take kids who are another one, but they're not necessarily take across the spectrum, that adds some other percentages there. But the reality is there's good data out there about what percentage, and every school should be. If they don't have any, there's something wrong in the community. And if they have 10 or 15%, there's something wrong with the identification system. So we know that.
I'd also suggest that anytime you put a weighted category, there's an incentive for the school district to meet whatever that percentage is.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
So.
Exactly. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let me close a public hearing on Senate Bill 272. And committee, I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 272, and this is not pre-wired at all. I'm not sure where you want to go with this, but we have an amendment, and we have a referral to the Senate Revenue Committee. There are no smoke-filled back rooms on this, except for Senator Cruz in his office when he's by himself.
That's a corner room.
Yeah, that's right.
The windows. The windows we were open.
That. Yes.
Whatever we would like to do. Yeah, one scenario would be to adopt the amendment and refer it on to the Senate Revenue Committee.
That's fine.
Okay.
With the dash two?
The dash one.
Chair Hass, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 272.
Senator Knope moves the dash two amendment to Senator Knope moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 272. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Hess, I move Senate Bill 272 as amended without recommendation as to passage, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
I can do that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 272 without recommendation as to passage to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. Any discussion?
That's good.
Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 272 moves to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. So that clears our agenda for today. That takes care of our work of Senate bills this year. Thank you, gentlemen, for your patience and hard work throughout. If there's no other business before us, we're adjourned.